Welcome to another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast. I am Mark Cook, and I am joined today by Mr. Scott Reynolds, or Mr. AWOL, as we call him sometimes.
I didn't go to Jacksonville, but you guys did a very good job covering it.
Dude, you missed Jacksonville. It's an amazing city full of Skinnerd history. Can it get any better?
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
You switched up the intro.
You did.
What intro? I switch it every week. I do a different one.
You do the same
intro. No. I change it up every week.
You threw
week.
Me off. I didn't know if we were starting or not, but apparently we are.
I don't know. This may be a false start, but anyway, we're going to roll with it and see how it sounds. Anyway, Trevor Sikkema, Man Bun himself.
Hello.
The Man Bun has kind of turned into, like, I sent a picture to someone
like
the other day.
It's getting
It's turned into a bunny tail. It's like a man bun, but with a ponytail, so I call it the bunny tail.
I got to wait till Halloween to cut it.
What's that?
Halloween, I'm going to do like a Viking thing. That's why I'm growing it out.
Oh, that's going to be epic.
Yeah, it is.
Wait a second.
That's going to be epic.
You went through all this time with your hair just for a Halloween costume. You realize they make wigs, right?
Dude, come on. I'm not going to fake it.
That's an insult to the actual Viking.
Tune into
this podcast to listen to the Buccaneers. It's been 2 minutes. I haven't heard anything about the Buccaneers.
And it's only been a minute 31. And wait a second. We got to get to the bottom. You say you're not going to fake it. You're faking it because you're wearing a costume. I mean, are you really going to be a Viking? Did you build a wooden ship? Are you going to go rape
Trevor
a village?
He's got Nordic blood.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to quit.
A descendant from the Vikings.
I'm going to quit at the end of October and become a full-time Viking.
You guys are going to make me shoot myself one of these days.
As long as you don't work covering the Vikings, that's all.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, if you were, you'd be covering one hell of a running back named Dalvin Cook.
Wow.
Who didn't drop any passes in today's Buccaneer practice. Just saying. We wanted to talk about today's practice, right?
We do.
What was wrong with the tight ends today? Luke Stocker dropped a pass.
I was surprised they actually threw to him, to be honest.
Well, it must have been everybody else was covered.
Luke Stocker, you're a blocker.
You know?
But I will say this, O.J. Howard dropped a pass in
more
the end zone. Well, more than one, yes, you're right. And, you know, that's what I mentioned in my SRS Fab 5, and I caught a little bit of grief from people saying, didn't you watch the national championship game and this guy held? Okay, that's fine. That
they
was
didn't
two
cover
games
him in the national championship game, by the
against
way.
Against Clemson, right? But there's a reason why... You know, he was known as a blocker at Alabama. And I'm not saying that he is a bad receiver. I'm not saying that he's not a threat in the passing game. But he is not close to being the sure-handed receiver that Cam Braid is. Would you agree with that?
No, I would completely agree with that.
Okay.
And I think we're going to see that as the season goes on. Cam Braid is going to be the leading receiver amongst the tight ends.
No doubt about
unless
it.
Unless he gets hurt this year. I mean,
Cam
that's
Braid,
just a fact.
I believe... is still in the running to be the second leading receiver on this team.
Yeah.
I really believe that. And DeSean Jackson's here. But
behind Josh Huff, you mean?
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
But the thing is, about Cam, though, is, and I think, Trevor, you picked up on this going back to the OTAs. When a play breaks
what
down...
What does that stand for?
Organized team activities.
Okay, good.
Okay. So when the play breaks down... Jameis goes in scramble mode. The guy he looks for is 84,
always.
Not 13.
Yeah, always.
You know, and that's no disrespect to Mike Evans, but he knows that Cam is going to be open and he's going to catch the ball. Yeah. And I think that's an incredible tribute to Cam, who spends an awful lot of time after practice every single day catching passes from Jameis. And that relationship, I think, is tighter and better than it is with Mike Evans. And that's not a slight to Evans. It just... it's praise for Braid.
And Howard does the same thing, too. I'll say that. You know, like after practices.
He's picked up on it.
It's Howard and Braid that are both out there. And I think
Antonio Autlayer also.
Right, yeah. He's been out there a little, too. And that's the good thing. You know, if Howard was here by him, if Howard was drafted by the majority of the teams in the NFL.
Baltimore, let's say.
He'd be the starting tight end right away. You
Correct.
Know, he'd be the guy, just because, even because of his blocking, they just give him the starting job right away. Well, if that happens, you know, I don't know if he'd be the guy out doing extra reps, whatever, all this stuff. Well, now, you know, he's in Tampa. He's in this situation. And you have Cam Braid, who is here, who is used to taking all these extra reps. And then Howard is like, I got to do that. I got to do that, too. And so that's a little way that they get to push each other, which I think is great for both.
The interesting thing, too, when you look at O.J. Howard, and he's gotten rave reviews. He did a tremendous job blocking in Jacksonville.
He's a monster.
In practice and also in the game. And the great thing about it is, as a rookie, at 6'6", 255 pounds, he can take on a defensive end, whether it's a 300-pound defensive end or a speed-rushing guy like Yannick Ngakoue or Noah Spence, and take them one-on-one and drive them, get some push off the ball, move the line of scrimmage. And people might sit there and say, well, why would you spend a first-round draft pick on a guy who just blocks? And obviously, O.J. is going to do more than that. and he can do more than that. But when you look at the running game and the ineffectiveness last year, people forget that in that second game of the season, not only did the team lose Doug Martin, they also lost Luke Stocker to an ankle injury.
Right.
And he was the lead blocker at the point of attack, on the edge, at tight end, and also sometimes lined up in the backfield as a fullback. And when they lost Stocker, and even when he came back, he wasn't 100%. I think he had an ankle injury for most of the year. That was a big reason why the running game wasn't as effective as it was back in 2015. It wasn't just the slump of Doug Martin that was part of it, but whether it was, you know, Charles Sims or Jacquizz Rodgers, there were instances where the tight end position, whether it was Cam Brate, who was more a receiving threat, or Brandon Myers, just didn't get the job done. So having a guy like O.J. Howard, even if he only gets targeted maybe four or five times a game and ends up with two or three catches for less than 100 yards, his impact can really be felt at the line of scrimmage in the run game.
And you know what else he does? Just by him being on the field, it makes defensive coordinators second guess or have to game plan for him.
That's a good
Again,
point.
When Luke Stocker walks on the field and lines up at the tight end
position, he's locking.
Nobody's scared.
Right.
Nobody's thinking, man, he may go out there. So, again, that just puts another thought.
Yep.
Maybe it creates a second of hesitation with a linebacker or even if they bring a safety. I mean, who's going to cover him if he goes out in a pass route? So, you know, the element of surprise that he brings to the table is huge. And, you know, I joke about Dalvin Cook. I still would love to have seen him in Tampa Bay. But, you know, even as a Florida State guy, O.J. Howard absolutely was the right pick. And he has not disappointed. We've, you know, talked to some people upstairs, and they've raved about O.J. Howard, particularly his blocking so far this preseason.
He might have been better at blocking than any Jags offensive lineman.
That's true.
I'm just saying.
The great thing is when you have Cam Brate, you have the luxury of not putting too much on this guy's plate as a receiver.
Right.
And you don't have to... You don't have to rush him into anything. He can kind of grow and develop naturally. But the fact that OJ is out there working after practice with Cam, who is definitely leading that room with his work ethic, that's a great thing. You mentioned Josh Huff. Let's talk about the receivers. Trevor, what were some of your observations from Jacksonville in terms of, you know, who was doing what, who was getting thrown the ball, and how that carried over into today's practice?
Let me sum that up real quick. Nobody could cover Mike Evans in Jacksonville, particularly that second day.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that stopped, and even in the game, let's be honest, the only thing that stopped Mike Evans in that game was Mike Evans dropping a touchdown pass, which may have been, and I went back and looked at it, it may have been Jameis Winston's best pass.
That was beautiful.
Certainly of the preseason, but it may have been the best pass I've seen
him throw.
I think he
lost it in the lights.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and he didn't blame the lights. He blamed himself after they got in the game, in the press conference. But the biggest thing, though, was it looked like for a second when he looked back, and Jacksonville has got a little bit of a notorious situation with their lights, the way that stadium is kind of designed.
Well, obviously that's why Blake Bortles sucks, because all his receivers have to look. He's looking in the lights, apparently.
Exactly. Like especially the lights during the day games as well, the 1 o'clock starts.
Yes.
Yeah. But interesting thing, Trevor.
Wait. I was going to say, every member of the Jags staff got Eclipse glasses, but they didn't put any in Bortles' locker. I don't know what they're trying to say about that, but everyone else got Eclipse glasses.
You know, speaking of Blake Bortles, you were there filming a video for our Pewter Report Twitter account.
Yeah.
You happen to be, you talk about a right place, right time.
That
got some play on Good Morning Football.
Uh-huh.
Kay Adams gave us a shout out there and played that clip, and also ESPN, that was on SportsCenter. Bleacher Report picked it up, and I think it got retweeted close to 20,000 times.
It was basically every single sports outlet that I follow.
In the history of the world.
Clip.
It was on Japanese TV.
It was.
Yes, I saw it.
Like from the 80s.
Yeah.
Like it traveled time.
Yes.
It bent time.
Well, I will say this. If you're out there listening, Pewter Nation, first of all, we appreciate you listening to the podcast and visiting pewterreport.com as always. Trevor handles about 90 to 95% of our video during the training camp practices.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And it's not that Mark and I can't do that. It's just that he is
a lot more
millennial.
He's our Greg Allman.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Oh, I'm going to say he's better than Greg Allman.
I got more hair than Greg Allman.
Ooh. I'm going to say, yes. I would say that I'm not saying shots are fired. I love Greg Allman. I love Riley. They're great. I've got a ton of respect for them. I'm just saying.
He's just saying video-wise.
I'm saying video-wise.
Knowledge, Greg
highlight
Allman
wise,
still take me under the table.
Yeah. I'm saying highlight-wise, Twitter-wise, in this training camp, I was a little concerned. I thought that, you know, that Trevor, being the rookie, would come in second place, and you know, that's okay. But I really believe he's gone toe-to-toe, and I think he's been the top tweet guy of all of the media covering the Buccaneers.
I bet I'm on my phone enough.
Not only does he tweet stuff for us, he tweets stuff and gives it away to Greg Allman, who was posting a picture you took of Riley Allman on 620 today on his Facebook page.
That was cool.
No, it's not cool.
That was cool.
No, you don't sleep with the enemy.
No,
you don't
no.
poop where you eat. No.
Greg and I have like the Cam Braid OJ Howard thing. You know, we're both out there pushing each other. So it makes for better content for Bucks fans.
Yeah, good job, Cam.
Yeah, so, nice job, Cam.
The thing that really... that I took away from the Jacksonville game, and Cam had two good catches. So did OJ in that game. Jameis really spread the ball around, and I wrote about this in my Fab Five. Jameis Winston's completing around 72% of his passes this year.
Those first two games have been. I mean, you can't ask for better first quarters, right?
What was Jameis's issue the first couple years at the beginning of
games?
Yes. And I asked him that after the game in Jacksonville. I said, what are you doing differently?
It's because a complete that was metamorphosis.
Because you always, you know, would get, I mean, people would say maybe he's too amped up before games. And this goes back to college, too.
That was the thing last year.
Like, the slow starts and things.
We had a 6-week span where we were just like, oh, they gotta run the ball so Jameis doesn't, you know, like have his
energy. Look at the Carolina game on Monday Night Football. They came out and rushed Jacquizz Rogers like 8 times in a row.
Yeah, right. And just like that. Yeah, no, it's totally different.
I don't remember what he said because I'm 46 years old. But I did ask him the question.
That's good. We'll have to follow up on that and actually find out what he said.
I think he said something like, you know, as Jameis always says, I'm just working hard trying to get better. I'm blessed.
That's probably exactly what he said. I'll take your word for that.
No, he did say, he said, listen, he said, I'm just trying to get better. And he wasn't just using it as a cliche, but yes, that's something that he knew he needed to work on, and that's something
he really has.
And it's been successful so far.
And you know, I don't think he can keep up this pace. Certainly, he hasn't played an entire game yet.
We saw him unwind a little bit in that Jacksonville game. Yeah, a couple of throws there after the first quarter.
You know what Dirk said though? He made two bad throws in that.
That's right. Out of 29 pass attempts, he made two bad throws.
And one was the near interception. Well, it was an interception, but they called him down. The one in the end zone. Which, again, I tried to give Jameis the out there in the post-game press conference.
Say,
I was like, you were definitely just trying to throw that ball out of the back of the end zone, right? And he started laughing. He goes, nah, man. He says, I was just feeling hot. I thought somebody would come down with it.
Oh, my goodness.
I tried. Well, I set it up on a silver platter.
Paul Posluszny did come out with it, right?
Yeah, somebody did come up with it.
No, it got picked. Yeah. But
I cannot wait to see the Hard Knocks episode this week where they show Jameis coming off the field after that.
Yeah.
Because Dirk was
I was
hot.
Watching the television broadcast on ESPN, and like you could see Dirk, the back of Dirk's head like, bobbing
saying,
up and down.
I was saying this to Mark right when it happened.
He was mouthing Jameis for sure.
For the last 5 years, Jameis has had, I'm way oversimplifying this, but he has had one thing to worry about.
Right.
Don't blow the game for us.
Yes.
You are talented enough,
yep.
no question, to win football games.
We even saw on Hard Knocks.
Don't lose it.
Dirk Cutter say
and he
just
still
that.
Made that throw. Yeah.
Jameis, we've got a defense now. And at the time, you know, there was a zero on the scoreboard
remember
for the Jacksonville
Jaguars. Remember Jameis sat down in the chair and he goes, what's too much?
Yes.
Well, Jameis, I'm no football coach, but I'm going to assure you that was too much.
Exhibit A,
yes.
The Jacksonville throw.
Yes, you can't do that. And then he had another throw where it looked to me like he was indecisive. I think he was trying to go to Chris Godwin.
Yeah,
and,
on the outside.
Yeah,
the
and you know, that was, you know, every once in a while he has that.
He wasn't, I don't know if he was indecisive, but I remember it was 2nd and 17. And he just tried to go for it. Like, I'm throwing this ball to move the sticks.
Yeah.
And he had no business throwing that ball. Like, he should have either gone for a smaller pass or something.
The reason why they were in that situation was because DeMar Dotson went out with a groin injury.
Yeah.
And we still don't know what the status is. Dirk has been kind of mum about the injuries. He's like, you know what? I don't have to tell you, so I'm not going to. And I respect that.
I miss Greg Schiano.
Why?
Well, Greg, let's be honest. Greg was probably
the
most honest coach there ever has been with injuries.
That's true. That's a good point.
But
it's also bad.
Yeah. So Dotson's going to have an MRI. Actually, he's had an MRI. They're waiting for results.
Right.
But the interesting thing is they were moving the ball extremely well in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you could go back to Dotson's injury as when the offense didn't come to a screeching halt, but it slowed down in terms of how easily they were moving the ball.
Yeah.
Caleb Benenock had a holding penalty that backed him up and created that 1st and 19 in the shadow of their
Fowler
own goal
was
line.
Eating his lunch.
Yeah, and then they put in Leonard Wester on that 2-minute drive. Wester gave up a sack that was a fumble.
Yeah,
that almost looked like an Adam Humphries touchdown. But it just goes to show you that that really is a concern area is the backup tackle position. It's not like Caleb Benenock's a bad player or Leonard Wester's a bad player. They don't have any experience.
If Pamphill's healthy, I think he goes over to that side.
I would hope that he goes
and
over
Evan
there.
Smith.
He was out today at practice, which is Saturday, and he's fine because at the end of practice, you know, when the offensive line does that one little sideline to sideline little wind sprint thing,
he was
that they
participating
do.
In that.
Yeah.
By the way, do you know why they do that?
No.
It's not for conditioning.
Well, I know. I know it's not because they only do one.
If they have a false start, George.
Oh, is that what it
run.
Is?
Because okay. I asked George if because remember we used to when Logan Mankins in his second year, he used to make the guys do that after every practice. Just you know,
they would actually do it during special teams.
Yeah.
In practice.
Yeah, and so I asked George one day, just coming off the field, you know, is this a you know Sweezy kind of taking the Mankins role? He goes, no, that's all me. He says if we have a false start, they got to run sprints
that's
after practice.
Good scoop. I like that.
So, but anyway, so
it's kind of stuff you only get in hard hitting, cutting edge reporting from PewterReport.com.
I like it.
But you know, let's not joke. Okay, I didn't get that on record. I didn't have the microphone there.
Mm-hmm.
Just a casual conversation. For people who wonder about reporters and what we do, so much of our stuff just comes from that. You know what I mean? You don't have to jam a mic in somebody's face because that takes them off guard a lot
of
times.
It's the relationships, too. It's the trust that you build up with, you know, talking to people
by being
in the
here
building.
Every single day, by being out at practice, the coaches seeing you and things
and
like that.
And they read
that.
Your stuff, and you know, if it's on point, they're gonna tell you things to help further, you know, your job, which is to educate and entertain Buccaneer fans, which is good, and that's a tremendous degree of trust we've always had with this organization, whether it be, you know, different general managers, different coaches, different players.
The whole key is not let Trevor screw that up, because we've spent a lot of years building this, and I have a feeling Rookie can really screw this up.
It's
you
coming.
Know, especially if he would have tweeted that about, you know, DeSean Jackson, if he would have said that to Jameis Winston about keep it effing in bounds, MF-er. The Blake Bortles deal. Probably wouldn't have gained any favor with the Buccaneers. Apparently, you're not very popular in Jacksonville right now.
Yeah, tell us about that.
I mean, it was
the PR staff in Jacksonville probably, you know, not going to send you a Christmas card this year.
Probably not. And
got over 25,000 likes on Twitter.
50,000, I think.
Up to maybe more than. Yeah. I mean, I know just on Bleacher Report,
no,
it was
I mean,
20,000.
Like, it was big enough to be all over the United States because Blake Bortles has
Japan.
He's the sorry.
Actually,
sayonara.
From what I heard through my sources, Doug Marone actually watched that clip and then used that as the basis and the foundation for after the game on Thursday night deciding that there's an open quarterback competition.
Based on Trevor's tweet.
It was the tweet first, and then he looked at the game and evaluated and said, you know what, I'm going to have to let Chad Henne in on this. I think we're going to have to kind of open this up a little bit.
They said, I read Doug's post-game press conference, and he said the third guy, I can't remember his name right now.
Brandon Allen
could win the job.
I mean, he was fine.
He was pretty good.
You know your organization's in trouble when you're allowing your third-string quarterback to be in the
so easily the third best quarterback on that team.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so obvious. Yeah. It's obvious. If anybody, and I don't know why, but like if anybody were to be like, hey, we'll trade you something for Bortles, a seventh round pick, I'd do it.
I can't tell you why, but I can tell you for a fact, Pewter Nation, that back in 2014 when he was drafted?
Yeah, he was 2014.
Right. The Buccaneers picked seventh. They drafted Mike Evans. Blake Bortles went third overall. He was the first quarterback taken that year.
Great call.
I can tell you for a fact that if Blake Bortles had been there at seven, the Buccaneers would have passed on him.
Okay.
I
thought you were about to say they would have taken
him. They passed on everybody else. Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, Jimmy Garoppolo. Who else came out in that draft quarterback-wise? That was pretty much it, right? Those guys and Blake.
Yeah.
Wait, who'd you say?
Manziel, Bridgewater, Garoppolo, Bortles. Those were like the top guys, right?
Carr?
In that year. Huh?
Carr?
Oh, yeah, Carr. That's true.
Yeah.
In 2014, yeah.
Yeah, but he's never really amounted to anything. It's easy to forget him.
Well, he was the guy that we said in our first mock draft. Like, that's the guy.
And I remember another site ridiculing us for that.
Right.
Saying that, well, just because his brother
we
played
actually
the
had
NFL.
Him in the first round.
Yeah.
We said that he was the best quarterback in the draft, and he should be the Bucs pick. And interestingly enough, in the second round, Oakland picked right before Tampa Bay and selected him. And you always have to wonder if he'd made it to the second round, would they have picked him? I don't know. but they were not going to pick Blake Bortles if he had been there at seven.
Right. So, well, we talked to Mike Kay, Jacksonville reporter, and Trevor and I both agreed that Blake Bortles' decision-making is very poor because he dumped his model girlfriend as soon as he got drafted, and he's not going to find anybody better than that. So we know his decision-making is poor and his personal
that's
life.
That's a good point.
They should have cut him right then.
That's the homework you got to do as a reporter.
Yeah.
Yep.
And well, I've checked out her Instagram. I think he made a terrible mistake.
Last thing I'll say about the Jacksonville game was what really impressed me, and I said this in the pregame show that you and I were a part of, with WMOR doing the pregame for the Bucks-Jaguars game, was they had to establish the run and they had to stop the run. Two things they did not do very well in Cincinnati. And, you know, Doug Martin averaged 6 yards a carry, got a touchdown.
He looked great.
He really did. Yeah, there were times where, you know, he followed the blocks really well, but he also made some things happen on his own.
Yeah.
Peyton Barber looked really, really good.
Peyton Barber was the second best running back that night.
No doubt about it. But what it really impressed me was to have Jacksonville, and granted they were without Leonard Fournette, but they still had Corey Grant, who had a 79-yard touchdown in the preseason opener for Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And Jacksonville was leading the league. They had over 200 yards in their preseason opener on the ground. And the Buccaneers' starting defense held the Jaguars to 1 yard on 7 carries at halftime. That is flat-out dominance. Mm-hmm. And that really impressed me. The front seven was on point.
Yep.
And
Levante David was a beast that game.
Yes.
Kendall Beckwith played well. And I know people were, when Kendall Beckwith got that tackle for loss at Sam, some people tweeted at me and they're like, see, he did, like, he read your stuff. And
you know what?
So, but he did. He had a good game.
He did.
Linebacker core did, you know.
Adarius Lanton, like,
oh my
stood
goodness.
Out like a
he
sore
had six
thumb.
Tackles in one quarter.
Yeah.
They all came in the third quarter.
And a blitz.
You know what?
And
I didn't see any of this coming based on what we saw in the practices, to be honest with you.
Particularly
on Monday, the intensity, the Buccaneers looked like they had no desire to be there in Jacksonville, and they probably didn't. Chris Conley said it in the training camp diary. He says, you know, going and living in a hotel for a week is not fun. You know what I mean? You're used to your surroundings. And, you know, I don't think they were overly excited. They understood the benefit of working against another team. But Trevor and I were watching even on Tuesday, and I mentioned to Trevor, he goes, there's a lot of talent on this Jacksonville team. Mm-hmm. And you know what? There has been talent on this Jacksonville team. They just weren't able to put it together. But you know what it all comes down to, and we know this after seeing it firsthand here in Tampa Bay, you got to have the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They can have the greatest defense in the world and things like that. You really got to have the quarterback, something for that team to believe in and to rally around. And there's nobody leadership-wise for that Jaguars team to rally around. And Doug Marrone is trying to change the culture.
Yeah.
And we talked about it. We saw them literally running wind sprints like they do in Little League
football.
And they're
doing up-downs, too. They do up-downs.
I mean, I'm surprised they weren't doing Oklahoma drills. You know what I mean? I mean, he's old school, and he's trying to toughen up this team, which they needed after the soft, friendly players coach Gus Bradley, great guy,
right?
Probably not a good personality fit for a young football team.
Agreed.
Like they were either.
The interesting thing too is if you remember when the Jacksonville Jaguars came in to Ray J, and they had you know, their run defense was pretty good that year. The Bucs beat them by a touchdown. It was like
38-31.
Yeah, something like that. It was a very high-scoring game.
By the way, Bortles looked amazing in that
game. He did. He looked really good. Allen Robinson had a good game.
Who was the defensive coach in that game?
Lovie Smith.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm just saying, Bortles, Lovie Smith's defense can make Blake Bortles look like
that. That's true. Yeah. Like Johnny Unitas.
And let's face it, he helped Kirk Cousins get a hell of a contract,
too.
Oh,
yeah.
Because really, Kirk Cousins, that was the coming out party for Kirk Cousins.
No doubt about it.
Thank you, Lovie.
But I remember Dirk challenging, you know, the Bucs running game and the offensive line. That was Kevin Pamphile's first and only start that year at left guard. He was replacing Mankins. He played really well at left guard, and that's what led to him getting the starting job this past year. But they ran the ball. Doug Martin had a really good game running against Jacksonville, and that front seven is big and talented.
Sure.
That defensive line is really big, and I think the Buccaneers, you know, we've kind of criticized them for having a soft training camp in terms of that, and they didn't put together some really good film up there in Cincinnati, and it showed. And I think to a man, they said, we got to be more physical, stopping the run, running the ball, and that's what I saw in Jacksonville, and I was very pleasantly surprised at how well they came out and took that message and produced.
I told my dad last night at my son's football game, I said, if you just look at the score of that game, you would think it was awful, right. all defense. Buccaneers offense looked really good, and the defense looked great. Yeah. That was the best 12-8 football game you'll ever see.
I tell you what, this team has got to stop scoring 12 points, though. That's the next step in Jameis's maturation, is getting into the red zone and getting touchdowns, not field goals.
Well, and also, making extra points helps, too.
Six is better than three. Okay, and that's the thing, too. And I'll tell you what, if
these... 13 is better than 12.
If these kicking adventures continue... Dirk's going to have to take a page out of Mike Tomlin's playbook and start going for two.
I'm offended because after the game, Dirk said that he might have to have an open kicking competition between Greg Allman and Rick Stroud.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Listen, I mean...
I'm going Stroud video, on that one.
I'd probably go Stroud on that too.
I'm sitting right here,
of you making the kick, left-footed...
I'm sitting right here.
Come on. He's got a young
somebody,
leg.
It's
a,
somebody
a
get
young,
coach.
Vibrant
somebody get
leg.
Coach my number.
Your technique on that, though, I watched it. It was brutal. I don't know how you made it. I mean, he did. I give you credit.
I can make a 35-40-yard field goal with no technique.
But do you know who else has terrible technique?
Roberto Aguayo.
No. He's got good technique. Eddie Pinero. But it goes in. That's all that matters.
Mark Mosley. Mark Mosley.
Why don't they bring the toe kicker back?
Yeah. Straight on kickers.
Straight on kickers. Yep. That's what we need. Trevor has no idea what that is.
Somebody get Dirk my number. That's all I'm saying. He texts me. I'll hit him with the new phone. Who this?
Okay. Well, you know what? It's going to be really hard for you to write a game story when you're on the field on Sunday. So
yeah,
think of all the inside scoop he can get working the locker room from the inside, though.
Yeah, that's true. He would forget all about us.
Probably. Yeah,
I mean, we can match whatever they're going to pay you.
I wouldn't give you guys.
We can match, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, we can? No? Okay, never mind. No. Good luck, Trevor. Nice knowing you.
Yeah. All right, well.
All right, let's see. What else we want to talk about?
Simeon Rice to practice today.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was cool.
Good Lord.
Could Simeon Rice get double-digit sacks this year? Go.
No, he's 43 years old.
God, you're lying.
I don't think he would.
He could suit up.
He would not last
16
games.
He could suit up this year, start on the opposite side of Noah Spence, get double digits.
He'd get five.
Listen,
he'd get you five.
He would get five, and this is what Dirk Cutter had to say about that, because Simeon was there watching practice, and he was obviously he talked to Dirk and all that, and he said he was asked about Simeon Rice and getting 10 sacks after the practice. He says, "This seems to be the number. You guys sure talk about it a lot. Last I heard, the object of the game was to win the game, but it seems like that 10-sack number, if you win the game, who cares? I just told Simeon we would suit him up. He told me he could get us five. He could get us five and teach the young guys. So if Simeon Rice says at age 43, and he looks incredible, he looks like he could still play. He looks like a football player today.
He's a handsome young man, let's face it.
Yeah, he is.
He's a good-looking guy.
Yes, but I will say this, and I tweeted this out during practice. In my 24 years of covering this team, he is by far the best athlete that I have ever covered.
Really?
Yeah. He would have two-a-day practices under Gruden out in Orlando, and he would be running wind sprints after practice like a gazelle, just like a bounce in his step, just like a glide, and... The guy never got tired, just never got tired. His stamina is just unreal. And he always wanted to do, I think his fantasy was to play a football game during the day and then have a boxing match at night. And I truly believe he could do it. I don't know if he would like win the fight or not. I don't know about his boxing skills. But from a pure stamina perspective, and I would see him out there, when the defense had to run after practice, you'd see guys that are very good athletes. Like John Lynch is a very underrated athlete, very good athlete. Yeah. Rondé Barber, who ran track in high school, all these guys. And they had that look of fatigue on them. And Simeon Rice, it's like he just warmed up and walked out on the field. An absolute amazing athlete. It's the best way I can describe him. Tremendous pass rusher, great sack guy, but first and foremost, a remarkable athlete.
Well, reminds me a lot of myself by your description.
I don't see the similarities.
No,
I don't.
None at all.
None.
No one's ever said I run like a gazelle.
Yeah.
A galoot. Why don't we use the word galoot anymore?
I don't even know what galoot means.
You remember, that's an old... That's
what's a galoot?
You would have heard that on the Three Stooges. Why you galoot?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm tired. Anyway, well, that's perfect because I'm tired and I'm in charge and I'm the engineer today. And, well, actually, Trevor's controlling the board, but I'm just going to stop talking.
I shut this podcast off whenever I want.
We're shutting it off. It's late in the afternoon on Saturday. Anyway, appreciate everybody following all of our coverage on pewterreport.com during the week in Jacksonville. I think we won those battles amongst everybody. We were there every day pumping out stories and tweeting and getting picked up nationally, or Trevor was. And anyway, definitely want to thank Brew Bus today on Saturday. Hosted a nice little meet
and
greet get together.
Mm-hmm. Had a great time.
Terrific beers. I recommend the apple pie cider. Pretty good stuff.
What was the brown one you got?
I had a couple. I had the Florida Avenue Brown Ale, which was tremendous. And then I finished it off with the Hazelnut Spread Porter, which is like a dessert and a beer all in one. It was tremendous. Mm. Dark beer.
And their chicken wings and french fries. Very underrated. Very good.
Eight minutes away from One Buck Place, too. I got a feeling we're going to be there quite often during the football season.
Yep, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, we appreciate everybody listening. I am Mark Cook for Trevor Sickema and Scott Reynolds, and we'll have another podcast for you midweek next week as we start taking a look at the other team from Ohio, the Cleveland Browns game, which will take place next Saturday night at Raymond James. We'll be previewing that. And, of course, there's practice on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week, also on Sunday, your last chance to see your Tampa Bay Buccaneers during training camp. Until next week, I'm Mark Cook for Trevor and Scott. We'll see you then.